Jeffrey de Havilland's famous balsa wood mosquito from World War II and the jet-powered Comet airliner made aviation history. But if you go back to 1931, so did his biplane trainer, the Tiger Moth. Another of the great airplanes we know of is the Beechcraft Baron, and both of these airplanes figure in stories to be shared by a pilot from the UK. Trim tabs on a Baron and tailwinds in a Tiger Moth. On this episode of I Laughed, I learned about flying from that. Hello everyone, I'm Rob Ryder, and welcome to episode 80 of Flying Magazine's I Learned About Flying From That podcast, brought to you by Avemco Insurance. Today my guest is British pilot Mark Brooke. He's flown many different airplanes, from light singles to 727s for DHL to the Dassault Falcon 7X and even a Booker Jungmeister. But today, he'll recount how he handled a maintenance faux pas in a Beech Baron and his own faux pas on a downwind landing in a Tiger Moth, one of the models with a tail skid instead of a tail wheel. We'll get started right after this message from Avemco. There's only one aircraft insurance company that invites you to call them and actually discuss your situation with an aviation insurance specialist. That company is Avemco. What kind of flying do you do? What if you don't fly all winter? Why is it just as bad to have too much insurance as too little? Is there a penalty just for being an older pilot? Call 800-338-8705 or visit avemco.com/flying. Either way, tell them you're an I Laughed listener and you'll save an additional 5%. Now, I learned about flying from that. Today on I Laughed, my guest from the United Kingdom, Mark Brooke. Mark, welcome to I Laughed on this wonderful day.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's a pleasure to be.
I am so glad that you submitted your I Laughed incidents to me. They are very different. And because you fly a number of different types of aircraft, we're actually going back to the almost to the dawn of aviation from one of your stories, aren't we?
Yeah, one of the stories concerns the Tiger Moth. I had one actually for about, that I owned myself for about 16 years. But this story relates to a previous one that I owned with a pal of mine. So yeah, I've been involved with Tiger Moths for about 25 years in total. But the Tiger Moth, it's a bit like a small Stearman. For those who are not familiar, it's a de Havilland aircraft, a basic 1930s trainer biplane.
Well, we'll get to that. Were you always involved or did you always love aviation? It's a question I like to ask all of my guests here on I Laughed. How did it start for you?
Okay, it started in a strange way. In the 1970s, I was in the oil business. I was working in the North Sea out of Aberdeen. Obviously, as you know, it's a very big oil center. And it's a bit like aviation. You never live where you work because they pull you in on paper. I was living on the south coast of England. That means in Scotland, the north. I was 400 miles away. And one day I was just walking along the beach there in Brighton. And I saw this light aircraft going along, just like 500 feet or something, just enjoying a nice Sunday flight. And I thought, that looks interesting. I tracked around the airport where it came from, which was Shoreham, which still exists, and found the flying club and took up lessons, basically. Yeah, that was it.
Did it take you a long time to get your private license there in Great Britain?
I was very lucky, very fortunate in a way. This was the summer of 1976, which in the UK was a fabulous summer. It was just nonstop sunshine, wall-to-wall sunshine for weeks. And because I was in the oil industry and a single guy, you know, I had quite a lot of spare cash. So I had all that in my favor. So I managed to get through it fairly quickly. I think it took me 5 or 6 weeks or something. Because generally, in the weather's so terrible that you get held up with, you know, bad days. But I was quite fortunate.
You went on to fly a lot of different airplanes. Tell me about what you developed, how your aviation journey grew to flying the kind of aircraft that you fly today. Tell me about how that journey went.
Okay. Starting off, obviously got my private license. I then actually went to the States. So I had a pal of mine who lived in Vermont. So I went to Vermont 1978, did some flying out there. at an FBO in Burlington called the Air Master, long gone, I think. And I got my commercial instructor rating and not multi-engine, but commercial and instructor. And the plan was to work there and all the rest of it didn't quite work out. So I came back to the UK converted my US instructor rating to a UK one and got a job flying as a flying instructor. And from flying instructing, I went into air taxi, which is where one of the stories comes from. Air taxi, I then went into things like King Airs, and Learjets, and Hawkers, and things like that, on worldwide charter. Then into the airlines, flying principally for DHL for about 12 years. After that, back into corporate, which is where my love lies, really. And that's where I am now.
Let me just back up a half a step when you talk about DHL. By any chance, were you flying DCH in those days?
No, not DCH. This was actually 727s. I was on 727s for about 3 years, and then the Airbus, the big A3.
That sounds great. Well, let's go back. With the wide range of aircraft that you have flown, let's tap into that air taxi situation that happened to you. What kind of airplane was it? Set us up for the whole story as to what happened on your first of our two ILAFT incidents.
Okay, so this was, I just looked it up in my logbook, actually. I'm interested, you know, time flies, I can't remember the date, but it was actually February 1980. So I was working for a company that had three aircraft. We had two Barons and a Golden Eagle, Cessna 421. And we were flying employees of a leisure park company to little sites around the UK and sometimes into Holland. And it was great for a company. It was my first job after instructing. So, you know, I was very excited. And at the time of this incident, I had about 950 hours total time and around 70 hours on the Baron, I think, like something like that. And this story concerned a Baron 58 flying out of Leavesden. And I think one of your guests recently was talking about Leavesden, which is an airfield long gone, actually, to the north of London. So on the day in question, I'm a little bit late, actually. So I get up to Leavesden, a little bit of a rush to get the aircraft airborne, luckily without passengers, and I'm positioning someone to pick them up. So I'm empty. I notice come out of maintenance. I do the pre-flight, do the walk around, start up, talk to ATC, all perfectly normal.
And on this maintenance situation, it was your own company's maintenance technicians, A&Ps, that took care of going through everything?
It was third party, but you know, respected to maintenance organization. They were Beechcraft maintenance guys, basically, and generally very good. Although they let me down on this occasion. So during the pre-flight, I do all the usual stuff, and I miss one thing that was absolutely crucial. And this gave me the first real scare I got in any year. It was quite scary. So I start the aircraft. Taxi to the runway, leaving 06. It's a 0624 runway, leaves still about 3,000 feet long, something like that. And they give me clearance to go. So climb to below 2,400 feet, which gets me below the London TCA, as you would call it. And then en route, so far, so normal. I start the takeoff roll. And as I'm accelerating down the runway, the elevator feels a little heavy. So I glance down at the trim. In the normal place, take off position, and then it starts to get heavier and heavier. So I just tease it nose up a little bit, and at that point, I'm at 100 knots. So I'm ready to go. So I get airborne, and at this point, the elevator is extremely heavy, and I'm desperately thinking what's going on. And the Baron is it's a powerful aircraft, accelerates fairly quick, and as it accelerates, I'm having to hold on with both hands to keep the aircraft from pitching violently to the ground. So I have a quick glance around and everything looks absolutely normal. I try one more time, nose up on the trim, and it lurches nose down.
Now, did you have electric trim? So you were making using the coolie hat on the yoke, or were you actually using the wheel?
No, good question. No, I was just doing this purely manually, just try and get some feel and figure out what's going on. I don't even have time or didn't have the capacity to pick the gear up because I can't actually let go of the yoke for a second because I haven't got the physical strength to hold the aircraft nose up.
Wow.
So I tell air traffic, I've got a control problem, and they acknowledge it in the kind of laid back, laconic way that all air traffic does, which is great. They clear me for a visual circuit. So I turn downwind. So I've got to come back and land, obviously. I turn downwind. And I managed just to let go of the yoke with one hand enough to snatch some power off. And I get the aircraft back to about 120 knots, probably, on the downwind leg. And it's sort of manageable. I can just about hold it with both hands. I'm still desperately trying to figure out what is wrong. What's wrong with the aircraft? I can't work it out. So I decided the best thing is to land flapless. I don't want to make things worse by putting flap down.
That would definitely pitch the nose down.
There you go. So probably the best decision. These things happen very fast, don't they? But just instinctively, I thought it'd be a good thing to leave the flap. So turn base, turn on final. And I can't remember the figures, but Baron is probably flapless 100 knots, probably something like that. And I get the aircraft on the ground, a little bit hot. The nose wheel thumps onto the runway because obviously it's still very, very nose heavy. And I'm managed to bring it to a screeching halt in the 3,000 feet. And my heart's thumping, partly because of the strain of actually trying to hold the nose up and partly through adrenaline. You know what it's like. So I taxi back to the fuel pumps where I picked the aircraft up less than 10 minutes previously. And I see the mechanics coming out of the hangar.
These are the guys who had done the work on the airplane before.
Well, actually, it was the chief engineer, so he's like the boss, so I knew pretty well. And he's looking at me and he says, "We've got a problem." I said, "Shit." Come over the conversation, but it was probably quite rude. I said, "Yes, I've definitely got a problem with this aircraft." And he looks a bit puzzled. And I get out, we walk around the aircraft together, and then I spot what the problem is. The problem is that the trim tab had been assembled the wrong way around. So every time you put nose up trim, it's going nose down.
Exacerbating the problem and increasing the pressure on trying to keep the aircraft level by pulling as hard as you could.
Yes.
Oh,
so
boy.
The more you trim up, the worse it becomes. And it, without exaggerating, I'm a pretty strong guy, but it was almost impossible to control the aircraft. So if you look at the Baron when it's static on the ground, the trim tab is normally just a little bit below the elevator, isn't it? This was actually sticking up a little bit. So being assembled in reverse.
Oh,
so
boy.
If you nose up, it's going nose down. If you go nose down, it's going nose up. And I didn't spot that on the walk around. As I say, I should have done. I was green in those days. I was rushing the walk around. I didn't spot the fact that the trim tab didn't look correct. And that was the reason for it. And he was very shocked, obviously. This is a big thing. And the weird thing is, it's a dual inspection. Any flying controller is a dual inspection. So two guys must have signed that off. Anyway, later in the day, they fixed it and I got airborne and the rest was normal. But that was a scary moment. I mean, luckily, I didn't have any passengers and the weather was super. You know, it was a nice sunny day. Had I been taken off into a low cloud base, I don't know. It might have been a different story.
Very, very challenging time for you, Mark. We'll get back to the lessons you learned a little bit later in the program. Let's move on now from an incident that took place about 44 years ago. We're going to get a little more current in an airplane which is actually a lot older, as we discussed earlier, the de Havilland Tiger Moth, the DH-82. That's got one of the weirdest engines in the world, the Gypsy Major. Isn't that the one, the inverted four?
Yeah, it's an inverted four. I mean, allegedly, rumor has it, it's half a French First World War V8. I don't know what truth there is in that. But anyway, yes, it's a de Havilland Gypsy Major 1C fitted into the Tiger Moth. It's about 145 horsepower, which is not a lot for a very draggy aircraft. And the Tiger Moth was made in huge numbers during the late 30s and through the 40s for training, basic training, a bit like, as I said,
I think they made nearly 9,000 of them, I think.
Yeah, tremendous number, because not just in the UK, but, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, places like that. So there's loads of these. At the end of the war, they were virtually setting fire to them. There were so many of them.
Oh.
These days, I mean, they're lovely aircraft and very demanding to fly. And, you know, very good trainer for that reason.
When was it and what happened?
It was, I'm guessing, 25 years ago, something like that. And I'm flying to I'm invited up to a little strip in Norfolk. Now, Norfolk is in East Anglia, which is like the sort of bulb-shaped bit of the UK on the right-hand side. That's East Anglia. And this was a festival, basically, like a seaside town had this little festival.
You told me earlier that you were going up to do some joyrides. Tell me about the runway.
Now, the F. the strip I was landing in is cut into a cornfield. It's very pretty. It's cut into a cornfield. It's about 1,700 feet long, something like that, maybe a bit less. It's perfectly adequate. It's got a bit of a slope on it. So it's a probably 3 or 4% gradient on the slope.
That's pretty much. That's big. That's a lot.
It's quite steep. I think they say 2, but I'm pretty sure it's a lot more. Anyway, so I get overhead, and I'm told by the guys on the ground that the wind is southerly.
Right out of the south.
So I think, okay, so what am I going to do about this? And it's a north-south strip. So am I going to land uphill with the wind behind me, or am I going to land downhill into the wind? Bearing in mind, everything's different on a Tiger Moth because it has no brakes.
Oh, but it's grass, and so you're going to use the tail skid to help slow you down, get that tail down as quickly as possible.
Exactly right. So I'm kind of mulling this over, and I think, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I think it's still better to accept the tailwind and to land up. That's my thinking.
Thinking that uphill grade will slow you down enough that...
That was the thinking. Exactly right. Yeah. So I set up the approach, and I land, and I've touched down at the slowest speed possible. It's a nice wheeler landing, and the Tiger Moth has slats on the top wing that pop out, and they were just bubbling, so I knew the speed was spot on, the slowest possible speed without stalling, and that's all fine, until the tail comes down. Now, when the tail comes down, if you can imagine from behind, it's now presenting quite a big aspect for the wind to push.
I've got it.
So the wind is now pushing me up the hill, and I can see straight away, I'm not slowing down. And at some point, I have to make a decision. Am I going to risk running off the end? Because I can't use brakes because I haven't got any. Do I run off the end and possibly into a hedge? Or do I basically bulk the landing, throw it away, and have another go? That's what I do. So I decided to have another go. So I put the power on.
And the power, again, is only about 145 horsepower. And the airplane's got to weigh about 1,900 pounds, right?
Yes, it maxed up all that weight, but yes.
So I mean, look, you're behind the power curve already.
It's not a powerful, no, but I mean, you're absolutely right. It's not a powerful aircraft. But anyway, the engine picks up instantly, thank goodness. And we start slowly accelerating back up the hill. And I'm looking at the airspeed indicator, and it's showing zero. I mean, it's literally just... The airspeed indicator on the Tiger Moth starts at 20 knots, and it's probably showing 25 knots on the airspeed. I mean, way below the speed I need. And the hedge is approaching fairly rapidly. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go at full power into the hedge rather than going slowly.
I don't know why I'm laughing, because this is not a funny thing.
Well, there's a humor in everything, isn't there? Anyway, the tail is obviously very responsive. I've got all that prop wash coming out of the tail. That's all great. And I just... very, 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 very gently tease the nose up. I have no option. And just clear the hedge. I just don't know how. And to this day, I don't know where the lift came from. Because, you know, the slats were fully extended. I guess there's a bit of wind over the inboard edge of the wing because from the prop wash, tiny amount. But somehow I get airborne. Just miss the hedge. The airspeed's still showing virtually nothing. And my heart is absolutely racing at this point because that's the closest I've probably ever been to crashing an airplane.
Then your next move was to land at another field that had a more advantageous runway, and you made the call back to your buddy, and what did he say?
So he says, look, I tell you what, the best thing to do is to come back again and land downhill into it. And I'll have some guys, he said, halfway down the strip to help you turn around because, you know, it's a narrow strip and you need someone to swing the wing to, you know, turn you around. So that's what we decided to do. So I came back and I landed downhill, but into wind, and I stopped in half the length of the strip. No drama at all. And that's when I realized, you know, one of the learning points out of this, that the tremendous effect the tailwind has on performance.
Well, that's a great way to end this part of the program. We'll take a break, Mark. Come back, discuss the lessons learned about what you learned about flying from that right after this message.
Since 1961, Avemco has been the only aircraft insurance company that lets you speak directly with a decision maker, empowered to improve coverage based on your unique situation. Visit avemco.com/flying or call 800-338-8705 for a quote and save an instant 5% for being an ILAFT listener. Save even more for most recurrent training, a new rating, or participating in Fast Team Wings. Just ask an Avemco Aviation Insurance Specialist how you can qualify and how much you'll save. Now, back to ILAFT. We are back with Mark Brook from the United Kingdom. Stories of a Baron and a Tiger Moth. Very little in common on the two airplanes, except they both fly and both had a pilot who wound up being able to get out of a pretty dicey situation. Mark, what did you learn about flying from that? And let's start with the Baron incident.
Well, Rob, I guess with the Baron, what did I learn from that? I would say, first of all, don't rush pre-flights. On that day, I was a little bit late and anxious to get airborne, so I had to get cracking. And I was probably, as I said, I only had like 60, 70 hours on the airplane. I wasn't that familiar with it, really. And I did tend to rush it, and it bit me because I should have spotted that the trim tab was incorrect. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is whenever an airplane comes, any aircraft, whether it's big or small, comes out of maintenance, check everything 2 or 3 times. Because human nature being what it is, human factors being what they are, people make mistakes. And if the airplane, before it goes into maintenance, is probably perfectly good, and it can come out of maintenance worse, or in this case, dangerously configured. So those are the two lessons I learned from that Baron incident.
It is very, very tempting, especially if a pilot owns his or her own airplane or flies one particular airplane with great regularity, to find ways of saying, oh, we're fine on this, we're cool. It's easy to overlook a lot of things, isn't it?
Well, I think also that this is the danger. You see what you want to see. In your mind's eye, you think, oh, that's right. But because you're not looking at it closely, and as I say, you see what you want to see. Had I been more objective and looked at that tail, I would have thought, hang on, that doesn't look right. But I didn't.
Do you do your walk-arounds with a card for the pre-flight, or do you do a walk-around with memory items in your head?
No, I didn't. I don't use a card. Never have done, really. If you just know what to look for, it's all the usual stuff, isn't it? It's very rare that there's anything different on a particular aircraft.
But wouldn't a card have been helpful to you in examining the trim tab?
Had I had a card, well, would it have said, it wouldn't have said what the trim position should have been. It would have just said, check the trim properly. So again, I would have seen what I wanted to see.
Got it. Let's move to the Tiger Moth, because you talked about at the end of our discussion on that, about the aerodynamic principle, about how much wind affects, especially a tailwheel airplane, when the tail's down and the wing becomes a sail, basically.
Yes.
What did you learn about flying that with respect to what happened with the Tiger Moth?
I think the Tiger Moth is unique in lots of ways because it hasn't got brakes. It's a biplane, very old. But tailwind has a huge effect on performance, which is why, in our world, it's factored 150%, isn't it? So whatever the tailwind is for performance figures, they put 150% on it because it has a tremendous effect on performance. So when I was actually doing the pull planning and having another go and trying to accelerate up the hill, I had no airspeed, because you've got to get, say, 10 or 15 knots before it even starts to register an airspeed, because you've got a tailwind. So that's the main thing, I think, is how tailwinds can affect performance.
Your ground speed also then was being affected because you were chewing up what was left of the grass runway much more quickly.
Exactly right. So the ground speed was quite high relative, but the airspeed was way down. As I say, barely registering. I think looking back on it, I might have got, because it's an uphill slope and it was a southerly wind behind me, I might have got a bit of orographic lift or something going up the slope. Something just pushed me over the hedge. And I think that, with a bit of luck from my guardian angel, saved the day. And then the second thing I learned is it's better to be lucky than good, as we all know.
I hear that, and I say that to myself, not just with flying, but almost anything. I'd rather be lucky than good.
How many times do your guests say that? And it's absolutely true.
Do you find that those lessons that you learned both in the Baron and the Tiger Moth have been helpful to you? And as you've flown much larger aircraft with the 72s at DHL and with the other biz jets like the Falcons and everything else that you've flown?
Yes, because airplanes are airplanes, and it doesn't really matter. The same principles apply. I think, you know, those formative years are very good learning years, aren't they? You learn a tremendous amount. And I think sometimes the guys who go straight into airlines now, good luck to them. You know, they get their 250 hours, they got commercial in our transport, whatever, and they go straight into Southwest or EasyJet in our case, miss a tremendous amount, because those you learn an awful lot in those early years of doing this kind of air taxi work or light aviation. The priceless experience.
We have had a couple of very good interviews with guys who were freight dogs flying in horrible weather in light twins or twin beaches or DC-3s. And that kind of flying in the system has given those guys experience that they are sharing with those of us who have not had that kind of experience, that they have seen it all, done it all, and those who have lived to tell about it are walking encyclopedias of good knowledge for any pilot.
Yeah, I completely agree. But then equally, you never stop learning, do you? I mean,
no.
Very end. Every single flight, you learn something.
We can never stop learning. Mark Brook, thank you for your stories, and thank you so much for being on I Laughed.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me. And I think the work you do is super. And, you know, I get a lot out of the guests you get on. Really great stuff. And thank you.
Excellent lessons from Mark today. I personally can't imagine how scary it must have been for him in both of his I Laughed incidents. I am so pleased with the stories that have been coming my way. And if you have an I Laughed story you'd like to share with the many loyal listeners we have, I'd like very much to hear it. Send me an email with a synopsis of your story and we'll consider it for an episode. My address is rob@flying.media. rob@flying.media. Thanks for listening. And I hope that you'll subscribe and share it with your friends. I Laughed is available wherever you get your podcasts. We drop episodes every couple of weeks, so you can hear the firsthand accounts of the flying lessons that sometimes only experience can teach. Lisa DeFries is the executive producer of I Laughed, and Kate O'Connor is managing editor of Flying Magazine. The I Laughed theme and commercial instrumental music for the podcast was written and performed by Rob Potorf. For Avemco Aviation Insurance and Flying Magazine, fueling the passion for flight since 1927. I'm Rob Ryder. Catch you next time on I Learned About Flying From That.